as you've heard this morning, hospital nurses are eyeing up possible strike action after rejecting the government's latest pay offer. Meanwhile, their counterparts in hospice care are pursuing pay parity with hospital nurses. Hospice nurses are paid significantly less, with estimates putting the difference between 10 and up to 20% less than DHB nurses. Nurses employed by 18 different hospice groups are currently voting on new MECAs, multi-employment collective agreements. If they're successful in achieving pay parity, it would put increased financial pressure on hospices, which already rely heavily on charity to meet operational costs. But if pay parity is not achieved, how can the hospice sector attract and retain qualified nurses? Our guests are Denise Van Elst from Palliative Care Nurses New Zealand. Welcome, Denise.
Good morning.
And kia ora and welcome also to Danielle Davies, who's an industrial advisor for the New Zealand Nurses Organisation members who work in the private hospital and hospice sector. Welcome, Danielle.
Morena, Catherine.
So let's begin, Denise, with you. What are the palliative care nurses seeking in their negotiations?
I'm not a party to the MECA myself, Catherine, but nurses are just would like to have that equity across with their colleagues working in the DHB. We are losing nurses from hospices and sometimes, hard to retain staff because of that lack of pay parity.
It's a significant gap, isn't it? Up to 20% in some hospices, but certainly up around 10% or more on average. That's a considerable gap.
It can be. And I mean, it does vary across the regions. And we're looking at, you know, I'm aware that the DHB nurses rejected their offer overnight. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see where that goes as well in the future and what that means.
I was going to say, what's currently being negotiated is parity with hospital nurses' pay as it stands, right? As with what was achieved at the last negotiations. If parity is achieved, that would then entitle hospice nurses to whatever the hospital nurses are negotiating and can negotiate in this new round, right? You'd have to go back into negotiations, but it would be another step again, potentially.
It could be. And I need to be clear, Catherine, Palliative Care Nurses New Zealand doesn't only represent hospice nurses. We have nurses quite across a range of settings, including in hospitals, in the community, and a large number of our members also work in aged residential care, which is another sector that's also struggling to attract staff. And a lot of that is also to do with pay parity.
We know it's very heavily dependent on immigration, on people coming to work from overseas, that elder care sector. And is it the case also, both with palliative care and with the elder care sector, that the numbers needing care are only going to grow, if not balloon, in coming years?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's been some serious work done a graph that's been showing that the increasing numbers. And when you look at that graph and look at what, you know, just within my lifetime, the numbers of people that are going to require aged care by the time I turn 75 is quite terrifying, you know, compared to what those numbers are like now. And if we're struggling for a nursing workforce now, what is that going to be like when we have even more?
Is it coming close to doubling, was I reading?
That's kind of what it looks like on the graph, yeah, and within the next 20 years.
Okay. So who do the palliative care nurses negotiate with? In this instance, it's hospices almost as a group negotiator. Is it similar to the fact that DHBs have a negotiating team with hospital nurses, yeah?
Palliative care nurses don't. We're not a part of the negotiations. That's between the hospices and the NZNO with the MECA.
Right.
There are some individual hospices with individual contracts. We're not involved in those negotiations, but we do just speak for our nurses, you know, and raise their concerns that, you know, it would be really good. I mean, if you were to consider, you know, having a national pay rate for nurses across the country, it would ease all of that. If all nurses were simply paid the same and it wasn't dependent on where they were working.
Right, so the nurses' organisation negotiate with a group of hospices, or in fact two groups of hospices, similarly to the way they might for hospital nurses. What you're saying is to get away from this competition between different providers, have a national pay rate. The problem, though, Denise, is that hospice's operational costs are only partly funded by government, right? A substantial part comes from charity, correct?
Oh, absolutely. Most hospices need to raise approximately 50% of their funding for the year from the community. So if the pay rates for nurses are going up, that's going to increase what they need to raise. And we know that the communities are already struggling. There's a lot of really worthwhile charities out there relying on the community charity dollar. We're just one. We're lucky that hospices are well respected. But, you know, the reality is, how much can we continue to gain from the community?
A national pay rate, the implications of that would be what? More significant funding from government.
Well, you'd hope so. I mean, when you look at the fact that the government is about to fully fund everything to do with the End of Life Choice Act, so if somebody was to be involved with ending somebody's life, that will be fully funded. But if somebody is simply supporting somebody to the end of their life when they die naturally, that's only funded 50%. What does that say about our society?
Are you stuck in the middle in the way in that you want parity for your nurses, you want better pay for your nurses, you don't want to be losing nurses, but at the same time you understand the implications for hospices with their current funding structure?
Oh, we do. And, you know, this is why nurses are still working at hospice. You know, we work there because we love the work. Just as the nurses in aged care, they work there because they love the work. They're not doing it for the money. But that doesn't mean they shouldn't be paid well for what they do. You know, it's said frequently nurses top the most respected profession, or they're near the top of the most respected profession whenever that research is done. You wouldn't know that from the pay scales.
What are the implications if hospice nurses don't get parity or don't get significantly better pay? Because we were speaking very recently to others who have got their eye on the Australian recruiters have been over here when the bubble opened up initially. And in all sectors, actually, including in healthcare, recruiters were over here working hard. Are we losing nurses? Is your sector losing nurses to Australia?
Absolutely. I've just heard very recently from one hospice that has lost, potentially losing three staff. One's to Australia, another couple are looking at Australia or elsewhere within the country for better pay. You know, they love the work, but in the reality, we've got to make a living, and people have to sometimes make financial decisions. And if it's going to be a better choice to live in Australia, then you can't blame people for going.
And fewer international nurses, I imagine, able to come in and fill the gaps at the moment, of course.
Yes, yeah. And I mean, the expectation is that, you know, the call on hospice services, with this increase in ageing numbers, the call on hospice services is also going to be dramatically increasing. We're struggling now sometimes to meet that need.
Denise, are you also losing some across to the hospital sector simply because they're living in a place where their accommodation's gone up by X amount and they just made the choice for higher pay?
Yes.
Can you quantify that?
No, I don't have that data, I'm sorry.
But it's happening.
It's certainly happening, yes.
All right, thank you very much. Stay with us, Denise Van Elst. With us, as I introduced earlier, is Danielle Davies. Now, she is with the New Zealand Nurses Organisation. She's an industrial advisor, and on behalf of members who work in the private hospital and hospice sector. Danielle, welcome back.
Thank you.
So let's just check in again with where these negotiations are at the moment and what nurses want. Again, is parity very much the ambition?
Yeah, so I would say the comments that Denise were making are very much on point. So at the moment, I'm responsible for the negotiations on a couple multi-employer collective agreements that cover two groups of large hospices, and that covers 18, as you said, Catherine, different hospices around the country. And like Denise was saying, we also have four other collective agreements that are with individual hospice employers around the country. So out of the 33 hospices in New Zealand, our members are covered by collective agreements in 22 of those. Oftentimes, in times of negotiations, absolutely pay parity with DHB Mecca is our large kind of pay claim or wage claim, and that's what we've been negotiating on behalf of, and that our members within those multi-employer collective agreements are currently voting on.
What has the history been, quite apart from parity? Has it constantly always been catch-up, trying to catch up to DHB wage increases?
It has, yeah. And a lot of the background about that is like what you and Denise were discussing in regards to funding. So hospices have been put in a position as companies or as employers, organizations, that they get some funding from government or from DHBs, for example, within their regions, but then they make up a lot of the rest of what they're not funded or underfunded by, for example, charity shops or donations from, you know, people in the community. We as a union don't think that that's right. Our health system should be fully funded. We shouldn't have to make up differences. And also patients, you know, hospice patients or palliative care patients around the country shouldn't have different access or different quality of care simply because of how their local hospice is funded.
There's great variation, isn't there? Some are on one of two mechas, some are on single site collective, some are just on individual agreements. And
that's
does that also significantly affect what you're paid?
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. So the members who are voting on their current proposed collective agreement, as far as numbers go, the increases, proposed increases are 4.5% to 12%, and that would be backdated for the past 11 months. And then we'd actually go back into negotiations in a month's time because this proposed offer is, the collective agreement just goes out to the end of August. So there's going to be a lot that we're watching in the other sectors, including the DHB, of whatever comes out from there. When members in the DHB finally do accept an offer, we're going to be right back to bargaining for hospice members.
So you're playing catch up the whole time. You're actually negotiating a contract that's about to expire.
Yep.
You're negotiating almost retrospectively. And then you would start again.
Yep.
And if you're seeking parity, you would start again with whatever the hospital nurses are able to achieve in their current round.
Yeah, and there's strength in that we'll be right back to it again with those very, you know, what comes in recent. But the thing is you're right, we're always playing catch-up, and why is our health system structured in this way?
Just given those numbers, 4.5% to 12%, that is a big hike in one pay adjustment anywhere, anytime in the health sector. It has its precedent, particularly some years ago, for nurses where there was a significant one-off increase. But that's a significant hike on its own, let alone then turning around and going back into bargaining. And is it realistic for many of these hospices to be able to deal with it?
I mean, realism, like has been quoted today in the media, that's one thing. The thing is that 4.5% to 12%, you could also turn around and say that's what our hospice members have been underpaid in the past year compared with our DHB members. Those are the exact figures that would match step by step of what they would make in a DHB. So actually, why are our members in certain areas paid less than others? That shouldn't be the case. And we think a nurse is a nurse is a nurse and should be paid with respect and value.
So are members voting right now on where you're at with a current proposal?
That's right, yes.
When do you expect to know the outcome?
On Monday afternoon.
The talk about a national rate, is there any optimism that that might be a way forward? Because we're already hearing all these different negotiations between your union on one hand for hospitals, on the other hand for palliative care and aged care nurses, and even then within that there's different collective agreements. It would be a big step to a national rate, wouldn't it? And who would have to institute it?
It would be a massive step, and it would be something that we need to, you know, discuss with the funders and with the government, obviously, because that would be a bit of a political move, which would be fantastic because it would have vision and it would provide our country with certainty. You know, what Denise was talking about earlier with nurses moving, essentially what we have in the health system is a free labor market. A nurse can choose to work at hospital and then move on to hospice if the rate's better there, or move to aged care. And so what that's doing is it's causing a lot of movement. And what we want in our health system is we want well-experienced nurses to stay in place where they're happy with their work and not simply shift around because of wages, for example. And that's what the system currently is the reality of.
What are you as a union seeing when it comes to recruiters over here and nurses now or even over the last year or more taking opportunities elsewhere?
Oh, that's been the case in New Zealand for a long time. So that's not unusual. I think the focus for us has been about really pushing the government to assist in promoting, you know, our own nurses, so to speak, so homegrown, so really pumping up education within New Zealand, making it more attractive, you know, when young people want to go on and move, decide to choose their profession for the rest of their life, which nurses often do work as a nurse for the rest of their life. We want that to be an attractive choice, you know. And so I think it's all about improving education of the opportunities of what can be in this country.
Is there, I was going to ask Denise this earlier, it was the question I forgot at the end. Where are we at with any kind of workforce planning? I know there was a workforce task force for a while, and then I think it became sort of internal to the Ministry of Health. Because if we're looking at something close to a doubling of people needing end-of-life care or high-level care with an ageing population, is anyone planning for a flow of nurses, a workflow of nurses for this? I know everyone's sort of super focused on our immediate crisis at the moment, but it will come and it will go. And what broader planning is happening? Can either of you speak to that?
I can speak to that. The Ministry of Health does have a workforce planning, and that still needs a lot more development and some input, obviously, with unions that represent health workers. But it's absolutely needed. You're right. We've been dealing with COVID for a year and a half now, and that's an acute issue that is still continuing. But this country needs long vision, and having a stable workforce in health is absolutely crucial to the health of the nation.
But is that planning looking ahead to what's happening to the population demographics and saying we are going to need to grow this workforce by X amount by this time?
Denise, did you want to comment?
Sorry, I had another voice. What was the question, Katha?
Someone crashed you, sorry. The question was, in the workforce planning that the ministry is doing, are they looking ahead at this demographic bulge that is coming and saying we need to grow this workforce by this amount by this time?
I think they're looking at it, but I don't know. I'm not hearing any answers. You know, we've got to make nursing attractive. And, you know, when I hear older nurses saying they wouldn't recommend somebody getting into nursing, that really bothers me. You know, we've got to be sure that nursing is attractive to bring new people and new committed people into the nursing workforce.
There's another very wise observation one of our always very wise emailers has sent in, which is if it weren't for higher level care in elder care facilities, nursing level care, and if it weren't for palliative care in hospices, these patients would be in our hospital system, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes.
So that in itself begins to raise the question of why there should be a significant differential in pay. Because if we begin to lose capacity in these services, they're going to end up being cared for by nurses on higher pay anyway.
And there are figures out there that demonstrate that good end-of-life care is cheaper than end-of-life care in a hospital. You know, the long-term care works out less expensive for the health system if it's set up and run well. And if you've got the sufficient staff to be doing the care through hospices, there's less cost for the government.
Danielle, I know you can't speak on the other situation with the nurses' organisation today, because it's not your area, which is the current negotiations and the decisions that the nurses have just made. Let's put strikes back on the table. But I wonder if you could comment more generally about the mood among nurses right now, post-COVID, facing the costs they are facing to try and live and work in our cities, hospitals or any other setting. Is the mood one that's perhaps as strong as it has been for quite some time for, if not now, then when are we going to get a step change?
Absolutely. I would say the mood is actually angry and very united, which is, from our perspective, a positive thing that our members are really united in how they're feeling. You know, the last year and a half has been, the year of the essential worker, right? So our country, as well as all the countries around the world, had to be very different in how we function day to day. And a lot of that was nurses, for example, stepping up, being, you know, the nurses in MIQ facilities, being the swabbers, protecting our country from COVID coming in and spreading like it has in other places. And now they're at the state where they've put in all that effort and hospitals are still understaffed, right? And that's a big, big theme that's coming through from the DHB members as well as other sector members. And, you know, they're just absolutely burnt out, and you do not want a burnt out healthcare system.
I think from speaking to a colleague of yours a while back, actually, there's also this whole issue of the six sort of steps or six stages that had been previously agreed with DHBs, which was also looking at things like safe staffing and those matters. And a frustration remains around progress, I recall hearing. Mm-hmm. Denise, just quickly to you though, you are mindful also of that hospice sector in particular and its ability to cope with pay rises and then parity. And if this is achieved, at least in two meccas, if not in some of the smaller individual sites, will something else have to follow, or some are really going to struggle?
There's always going to be some struggling. Sometimes the pressure's greater on a bigger hospice because nurses are the backbone of hospice care. It's the biggest, you know, number within a hospice service is their nurses. So bigger hospices, that's going to have a bigger impact. Smaller hospices perhaps, you know, struggle a little more on the fundraising aspect. So it's going to impact at every hospice. We'll be reaching out to our communities again saying, can you help us with that?
Thank you both.
Thank
Denise
you.
Van Elst speaking there is from Palliative Care Nurses New Zealand. Danielle Davies is an industrial advisor for the New Zealand Nurses Organisation whose members work in the private hospital and hospice sector. So they are also in negotiations. This is separate to the hospital nurses you heard about this morning. The hospice and elder care sector nurses are also in negotiations and also voting on a contract currently. That's result expected early next week. And I forgot to read you the statement from Hospice New Zealand pertaining to our last piece. This comes from Mary Schumacher, Chief Executive of Hospice New Zealand. This is the organisation that represents all hospice services across the country. She says nationally it costs around $155 million per annum to provide hospice services free of charge, with approximately $77 million required from community fundraising contributions. This is the gap between the cost of care and what the government currently contracts to the 33 hospice services to provide. The percentage of community versus government funding varies across each individual hospice service, anything from 35% to 87% from government through the DHB in each area. And hospices are very well supported by their communities who generously give funds and volunteer each year. In some communities, the increasing fundraising requirements becoming untenable, and there's concern on how this could be further impacted by any pay parity requirements following the outcome of the DHB collective contract negotiations. Hospices, like all healthcare providers, are impacted by workforce shortages. Wage and condition disparities across employers, both locally and internationally, are an ongoing challenge. Hospices want to position themselves as employers of choice. We are acutely aware of the broadening salary gap between DHB and hospices and the impact this has on our current workforce. This widening gap is putting huge pressure on the individual hospice organisations. Thank you for the statement.